Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to Yah Radio. I am your host, Dina, and here at Yah, we believe that you are amazing. So buckle up and hold on tight because we have a jam-packed show tonight. We're going to start out with a subject that can be pretty controversial. We're going to talk about cannabis. And tonight, we have with us author D. Marie Dumas. Dumas is a breast cancer survivor, having to battle cancer and the negative side effects experienced by prescribed pharmaceuticals set her on a path to research natural remedies for cancer and various illnesses, whether it is something as simple as the common cold or something as potentially life-threatening as cancer. Her goal is to be one of the vehicles to help rid our society of the negative stereotypes associated with cannabis use, or some of us know as Mary Jane or marijuana. We'd like to welcome Ms. D. Marie Dumas. Ms. Dumas, are you there? Okay.
Actually, Dina, we got Andrea Harris on the phone first.
Oh, okay. All right. Is she available? Is she ready?
She's on the phone.
Hello, right. Good evening. I'm here.
Hi, Andrea. This is Dina. How are you?
I'm wonderful, Dina. I'm wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I am glad to have you here. And so, you know, this is so amazing. I have looked at a few of your pieces, and you, my friend, are what we call at Yah Radio, are truly amazing. And that's what Yah stands for, if you don't know.
I heard it.
Yah is, you are amazing. And we really do believe that so many of our people are worthy and, you know, great and just simply amazing. And sometimes they don't even know it. So
wow.
I've seen some of your things, and you are a serious overcomer. You overcome quite a bit, you know. And it seems like you have taken all of the tragedies, the drug abuse, the alcohol abuse, and the firsthand accounts of domestic violence, and you've used those life tragedies to not only become an overcomer, but to help others become an overcomer as well.
So,
Ms. Harris, if you could kind of take me on a journey and tell me a little bit about you and all of the many things that you are working on.
Wow. We'll be here till tomorrow, so I'm going to break it down so we can just be here for a few minutes.
Okay.
I am, first of all, I'm blessed to be here today. I'm blessed to be amongst you guys. I thank goodness for Myron for just, you know, putting this atmosphere together for me, and just to know that we are amazing and we're doing amazing things. For me, I grew up in D.C., born and raised in Washington, D.C. I experienced, I tell people, I had firsthand experience with domestic violence as a child and trauma as a child as I watched my mother be abused. And my late mother, I just lost my mother January 15th. And so I would use the arts. I would use the arts as a way of escape. So I would run and read a book. I would run and listen to music. I would run and just hide. And I would create poems and things like that. And then in elementary school, we wrote our school song. And in high school, I was in like the drama club and things like that. However, I didn't really give it my all. I ended up loving music. I love hearing words that if, you know, if I have something on my mind, I don't have to say it. I'll just play a song. If you lose me, you lose a good thing, all that kind of stuff. You know, I'm going down. Music that would just, you would just have to play it and not even have to say a word because it was messages in your music. And I'll never forget when I was about 13 years old, my cousin, it was my summertime, and I said, I want a 45. And he said, what is it? I said, I want the song Smiling Faces. And he was like, what you know about that? I said, I don't know. I just like it. And so I got my 45, and I played it, and I listened to it, and I started thinking about the people who are actually smiling your face, and they really weren't for you. And that's at 13 years old. By high school, I had become a rape victim in high school, and I was a victim of molestation, all these things, and I was a very quiet, shy little girl. You can't tell now. I always tell people I'm shy by name. I was a very quiet, shy little girl. My late stepfather used to call me Scared Street because you could just find me with a book. But what happened was I turned, because of the low self-worth and because of the low self-esteem that trauma happens, you know, when you're dealing with trauma, you're dealing with PTSD and all those things, I gravitated to drugs and alcohol. And at 7 or 8 years old, we were cleaning up the house parties, and they would leave the pony beers. They would leave beer in the, you know, little beer was left in the little ponies, and we would drink and pretend that we smoking and, you know, become as our elders were at that time. But needless to say, by the time I was 25, I was addicted to snorting cocaine. By the time I had turned 25, I had had bouts with PCP. I remember taking my clothes off and standing there getting ready to jump off the roof and realize that I didn't jump. And then I could remember going to my first government job in 1989 or 1990, my very first government job, but I couldn't work without snorting coke. I couldn't work without, I just couldn't do it. And I kept quitting my job because getting high was more important than staying functional. So I would quit a job and get on welfare. And by the time I was 28, April 12, 1992, I had gotten clean. And most times at 28, people were coming off of college. I was coming off of crack and snorting heroin and drinking. I haven't had a drink or a drug since April 12, 1992. So now I've been clean longer than I had used. And so then I wanted to do something different. I realized that I had exposed my children to a life that wasn't conducive for children. And I say, God, if you let me do it again, I'll do it right. So I adopted. I now have 10 children, and 8 of them are adopted. And out of the 8, I think 4 or 5 of them are relatives. And they don't know. They don't know Candy. That's my nickname. They don't know Andre or Mommy, the one that's on drugs. They don't know the mommy that was an alcoholic. They don't know the mommy that smoked cigarettes. My older children are very, very instrumental in my life. They're very helpful in my life. They've been there for me. And yes, we've had our issues, but we have overcome so many great things. And my daughter's 39, and she's my BFF. And so after adopting the children, I went on to doing other things. I was preaching for many years. I retired in 2018. And I said, you know, I'm walking off the pulpit, and I'm walking into my purpose. And I realized for real that I had given so much to so many people, and I didn't save any for myself. I was married 2 times to the same in 2017. I was sick, and he said, I don't want a wife. I don't want to be married to nobody in the industry. I don't want this. I don't want that. And he left me at in 2017, and I began something called Trust Your Transition. Because I've always said you're either going in, sitting in, or coming out of something. And that is a transition moment where God is shifting you from one direction to another. And I wrote a book called Being Made Whole, but I had to redo it because I was so hurt. And, you know, hurt people hurt people. And I was writing out of a hurt place. So I asked God to revamp my mindset, and I wrote out of a place of wholeness and healing. And then after I wrote that book, I wrote a book called Freedom from the Bondage of Brokenness, because I was always giving to everyone else, but I was broken. So I had to get out of the pulpit, and I ended up going to another ministry where I am today. I serve as an evangelist. But I always tell people, let's deal with relationships, not religion. And so my pastor was the one that said, Andre, you have a dream, you have goals, desires, get out of here and go do them. And I was like, sir, but if I write this kind of story, people are going to be, he said, don't worry about what people say. Go out there and do what you do. And I started out writing stage plays because I was in a wheelchair, and I wrote a stage play, and that stage play led to other things. I wasn't an actress. I was a writer. So I wrote the stage play, and then the second time we did the play, people that were supposed to be in the movie in the play didn't show up, and that's what started my acting career. And then I say by the time I'm 55, I wanted to do three short films. I did 3 short films before I turned 55. I began to speak those things into existence of what I wanted for my life. And I won multiple awards, national and international, for those short films that I wrote. And since then, everything has been history. I opened up a film studio in Bel Air where we do movies. I speak on Trust Your Transition. You can follow that. I do motivational speeches. I'm considered a transition coach. A lot of people are life coaches, but I'm a transition motivator. I motivate you from getting from that stuck place. I motivate you from going in. While you're going in, I'm holding your hand. While you're sitting in, I'm holding your hand. And when you're coming out, I'm clapping our hands for the rejoicing of what you went through. So I motivate people. people to come out. And amazing that I'm talking about Trust Your Transition, because not long ago I was saying I need to go and be with my mother. I lost my mother, and I could hear God saying, now you were happy when everything was going well. How are you going to handle this now? And how you going to tell people? So all of my tests was a testimony. I was sad, and my mom spoke to me December 11th and December 12th. She was fighting for her life. My mom's first husband, the one that was doing the domestic violence, she had been with him for over 30 years, and he passed away December 28th, and my mom passed away January 15th. So my sister lost both of her parents. But what it did for me was it allowed me to start making time. It had me to start reevaluating my relationship, my friendship, the things that I had done. I was busy getting busy doing nothing. So I started reevaluating those things. And now I'm making time, giving time, and making time for my loved ones, making time to rebrand myself, making time for my life to take off the way my mother would have wanted me to live. And so that's where I am today. And I'm here, and we have a big event coming up called Trust Your Transition Awards Show, where there are nine women are being awarded for all the hell that they had to go through and overcame. And we have a lot of great people that will be in attendance there. And that's Andre.
And that is the end of the show. You have unpacked it so much. You know, it is so much right there, Andre. And I tell you, you know, it's something being an overcomer. You know, that's one thing to be an overcomer. But it's something else when I heard you say that not only were you overcoming and then you went out and you wrote books, but you had to come back and rewrite the book, because mm-hmm. so often we step out in those hurt places.
Mm-hmm.
We're still hurt. We think we've just tipped and touched the ice of overcoming or healing, and we think mm-hmm. that we're ready for the big boom. We're ready for the stage. We're ready for the books. We're ready for these things, but we're not, because we just cracked that shell. We just really cracked that shell, and we're not ready to be seen yet. You know, but mm-hmm. we don't know that. So many people, it's kind of what happened to, Juanita Bynum. She mm-hmm. jumped out there. She had so much going on, and she jumped out there. She got married, but she was really very broken and very hurt. And then she called herself writing and telling people how to be married. She couldn't. She had to be set down.
Yep.
And that's what happens to so many people. But if you don't know that side of the story of them, you don't realize that the book that you're reading is really a book that's written by a very, very still, very broken person.
Very broken.
Yep. Very broken. And so it's amazing, and this is why you have, A, so much to say, and B, you are able to now put all of those efforts into filmmaking, philanthropy, mm-hmm. books, you know, speaking, and you, like you said, you're a transition motivator, but what I hear is you are a transformational speaker, because you can tell that when people sit down and they hear you and they listen to you, their lives begin to transform. And that's really what we need. We need transforming lives. We can't have any more just motivational speakers.
Nope.
Because I might be motivated in that moment. I might even be inspired in that moment, but 30 minutes after I walk out of there, 24 hours later, I'm probably not motivated, nor am I inspired.
That's right.
I have to have something. I have to have heard something. Someone touch me in that deep place that helps me transform my life.
Come on.
And mm-hmm. that's what it sounds like you do. You help people transform. Form their lives, and we so need it. You know, I was talking earlier today with somebody, and we were talking about how So many people are broken. So many people, abusive situations, whether it's rape, molestation. You know, I speak to teachers once a year about domestic violence and things like that for their continuing ed. And it's amazing to me, you know, the numbers start out, you know, 1 in 3, 1 in 4, 1 in 6. I'm beginning to think those numbers are 1 in 2.
Mm.
Not 1 in 3, not 1 in 4, 1 in 2. But
my goodness.
Andrea, you know, I wish that we had so much more time. I think that was my bell, you know. But let me, and I really hate that because we actually need more time. We need to spend more time for you because you have a lot to say and you have a lot to share, you know. But I think it's so needed. It's so necessary.
Yeah.
So I'd like for you to come back. So if you could do a couple of things before we go, can you tell the audience where to find you and what you have next?
Everything is I Am Andre Harris. I Am Andre Harris, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. And coming up March 26th is the Trust Your Transition Women's Her Story Awards. Also March 25th, we will have Trust Your Transition Day with Andre, where you will begin to see some of the movies that nobody has seen yet that I have wrote, directed, and produced. And so we'll be at the Escape Theaters in Maryland. So if you guys want to come on out and support us. And all the information to everything is on the website or on Instagram or something like that. But follow I Am Andre Harris. Anything you need to know. And you can Google Andre Harris and everything you need to know will come up. A-N-D-R-A-E-E Harris.
All right. We are going to do that. It has been such a pleasure, Andre, to have you here with us. And let me tell you, we got to have you back. So just
all
promise
right.
me
Thank
you'll
you
come
so
back
much
where
for
we can talk a whole hour.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you so much.
You're so welcome. You are so very welcome. And you are amazing. You have a great evening.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Hello.
Uh-oh, it's me. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi there. I'm so sorry. I was having all.
Dumas. That's all right. We've got you here now, though, right? So we're going to roll with it. All right.
Okay.
So our next guest here tonight is Ms. Dee Marie Dumas. And we are going to talk about a subject that I know is pretty controversial. And that is the subject of cannabis that I affectionately call Mary Jane, but they call it cannabis. Now, the one thing about Ms. Dumas is that she is a breast cancer survivor, and having battled cancer and all the negative side effects experienced by prescribed pharmaceuticals, those are the things that set her on a path to research natural remedies for cancer and various illnesses, whether that was something as simple as a cold or something potentially life-threatening like cancer. Her goal is to be one of the vehicles to help rid society of the negative stereotypes associated with cannabis. So we want to welcome you, Ms. Dee Marie Dumas. How are you today?
I am good, and thank you so much. That was a perfect introduction.
Awesome, awesome. So kind of reel us in, take us back, and tell us how you became acquainted with cannabis, marijuana, Mary Jane. I mean, how we want to put it, because I know in the streets we call it Mary Jane, you know?
Yes, we call it Mary Jane, weed, all types of stuff.
Yes, absolutely. Well, so how did you get on the road of marijuana?
Well, let me first say I want to put out this disclaimer. I do not smoke, and not that I think it's anything wrong with smoking. I just don't smoke. It's not my thing. And I didn't write encouragement to start smoking, as a lot of people think. I've gotten a lot of jokes over the years when I started trying to market my book. Oh, I didn't know you sell weed. I didn't know you smoke weed.
Right.
No, I do neither. I don't. But what – so, no, I wrote the book for the purpose of being informational. And like you said, I want to help – I want to be one of those conduits to help rid society of the negative stigma associated with weed, because the first thing that people tend to think of when they think of weed or Mary Jane or cannabis is, you know, some stonehead stoned out in front of the TV, sitting around all day smoking, staying high and not doing nothing and just being a non-productive member of society. And
that's what
true.
I was thinking.
Yeah, and I have to confess, I used to think that too. I did. I bought into the hype and the negative stereotype, and I just lumped everybody into the same category, and I found out that that wasn't true at all, and I found that out as a result of my own journey being a breast cancer survivor and the side effects that the medicine was causing me. It sent me into early menopause, and the symptoms of that were horrific. Try to imagine flashing and sweating every 30 minutes, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that's what the medicine they had me on did to me. And it's a medicine that they wanted me to take for 5 years. But after 3 months of being sleep deprived, I couldn't do it anymore. And that's when a friend of mine recommended it. And my first thought was, ooh, girl, I don't smoke weed. That's so nasty and blah, 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 blah. And she said, well, no, there's all types of ways you can consume. You don't have to smoke. There are things like honey. There's candy. There are baked goods, just all different types of ways that you could consume it. So my doctor, who is a wonderful doctor, I was blessed to have a doctor that is not quick to describe a pharmaceutical. He's a regular internist, but he's the type that would prefer natural remedies himself. So I asked him to write me a script so that I could get a card, and I did, and I tried a piece of candy, and it was the first time after trying that candy, it was the first time in 3 months that I actually slept a whole night's sleep, as opposed to getting 1 or 2 hours of sleep every night for 3 months. And it was amazing. I mean, I slept straight through. I didn't flash. I didn't sweat, any of that. I thought I had experienced a miracle, but I didn't. It was just the result of the cannabis. And that's when my eyes really opened and I learned that cannabis is not a drug. It is actually medicine. And just because there are a lot of people out there that abuse it, that doesn't make it bad. It just means there are people that abuse it.
Okay. So now, if I'm a person who is strictly against the use of marijuana because I'm thinking pothead, you know, do nothing, you will get nothing accomplished. Tell me some things that would make me say, you know what, maybe, okay, that worked for her, but what else? What else is there? You know, give me some things that I could say, I could hold on to and say, you know what, maybe I won't be so judgmental. Let me take a look.
Oh, absolutely. In my book, I talk about various ailments that it treats, not just the symptoms of cancer. There are people that with epilepsy that take it, people with post-traumatic stress syndrome, people with Alzheimer's. There's a story. Have you ever heard of a product called Charlotte's Web?
No, I have not.
Okay. Charlotte's Web is a CBD oil, and a CBD oil is a component of cannabis, but it is the component that does not cause a high. It doesn't have any psychoactive properties. And I found out about that through the story of a woman who had a child, a little girl, and she was born with epilepsy. And her epilepsy, along with the other ailments that she had, was causing her several hundred seizures every single day. And this was a poor little baby. And after the doctors did all they could and couldn't figure out how to stop her seizures and couldn't cure her at all, someone recommended to her CBD oil, which is a component of cannabis. And she said, well, no, I can't give my baby that, blah, blah, blah. But out of desperation, she tried it because nothing the doctors were doing was working. And it eliminated her seizures.
Oh, my goodness.
It eliminated from that. She was able to develop a product called Charlotte's Web. And it's really taken off. And that's what really set me on a path to really start researching all the ailments that cannabis can treat.
Okay. So wait a minute. Let me back up a second because I'm a newbie at this. So cannabis versus CBD oil, the component that is in cannabis, straight cannabis, that's not in CBD is the THC.
That's correct. The THC is the component that causes the high, they call it, or the psychoactive property.
Okay. So when you remove that from it, then it becomes more medicinal.
Absolutely. And actually, and it's not just the CBD that's medicinal. It's the THC as well. The THC is the medicinal part for me because it enables me to sleep. When I say psychoactive, sometimes the first thing that people think is, oh, you see visions and have hallucinations. And I was like, no, it doesn't cause that unless you have some sort of illness already. But no, that's not what psychoactive means.
Okay.
It just enables me to sleep without flashing through the night so I can have a solid night's sleep. So it's medicinal, since that the CBD just doesn't, it doesn't make you sleepy. It doesn't cause a high.
So how would you know if you needed the THC component in the cannabis versus just CBD oil or CBD?
It would depend on your illness. For me, the CBD would not have worked for me because it doesn't make me sleepy. So it wouldn't have helped me with my menopausal symptoms, the early menopause that the medicine that the pharmaceutical sent me into. So the CBD would not help me. But if I had, let's say if I had something like maybe anxiety or some pain in my body, pain from joints, CBD is also can be a pain reliever as well. But my problem was not pain. My problem was not being able to sleep and the constant sweating and flashing. So what you would need would depend on your illness.
Okay. So then how do we differentiate a good CBD versus, I guess, not so good? How do we know? Because I see so many products out there now with, say, they contain CBD oil.
Right, and you really can't. With CBD oil, just like any other product, when you have several people that make the same product, you really don't know the good ones from the bad ones. The best thing you can do is just do a search on reviews. But just knowing from the top of your head, you really can't say. And, of course, the maker is going to tout theirs as better than the other person. But you really don't know until you try it. But for me, before I try anything, I do tons of research, whether it's buying a car or buying or something to eat. I do a lot of research, and I check out what the reviews are first. And if it has a decent amount of positive reviews, then I'm a little more likely to trust it. But you don't really know until you try it for yourself because everyone's physical makeup is different.
Okay. Now, I know I have my very best friend from the time I was about 13 years old. And, but anyway, from the time I was about 13 years old, I met her mother. Her mother then had MS, and she had it long before I met her. When I met her, she was actually in a wheelchair, a motorized wheelchair, and she also had those walking canes, and braces on her legs. But she used to smoke. She smoked weed every single day that I can remember. And she just passed away. I've now been about 8 years. Her body sits in Case Western Reserve in their, I guess, where they take your body apart to find out why. They want to know, how did she survive MS so long? She is one of the longest living people with full-blown MS.
Wow.
Well, she was one of the longest living people with full-blown MS. So the irony of cannabis and probably other natural drugs that we know very little about, and of course the pharmaceutical companies don't want us to know anything about them, but
that is right.
I do believe that God he put in the earth something to handle everything.
Absolutely.
I don't think there's nothing.
Yep.
Say that again.
Even the scripture says that the healing of the trees or the leaves of the trees are for the healing of the nations.
That's right.
And even
and
though
I do.
That's a go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
No, it, And even though that scripture may be contextually may be something different, the point is I totally agree. Everything from the earth is good for you. And what happens with people is that, like anything else, anything that's not used for its original purpose, that's the definition of abuse. So because people abuse weed or anything, that doesn't mean it's bad. Take poison ivy, for example. The first thing you think of poison ivy, oh, my God, poison ivy is a horrible thing. Well, no, it's horrible if you come in contact with it because it'll make you break out. But the point is God made poison ivy for a reason. So poison ivy in and of itself is good. And it's not evil in and of itself. It just depends on how it's used. It was made for a reason. Even though right. we aren't supposed to come in contact with it, it was made for a reason.
Right, right. And I absolutely agree with that statement because, you know, when you think back in ancient times, before we had pharmacies and pharmaceuticals, what did they use? They used something in nature.
Absolutely.
And there was always something.
Yep.
That's right. Plants and herbs were always used to help us and help our bodies mm-hmm. to do whatever it was that we needed. They even, I was looking at the Indians, and the Indians used cannabis for lack of better word. I mean, you know, cannabis and probably some other things too, but they used cannabis mm-hmm. to even bring them closer to the spirit.
Yep.
Go figure. You know,
yep.
So we are quick to, one thing I do know about us as people, we are, especially Western people, we are quick to demonize that we don't understand.
Absolutely, and that is the very definition of superstition, demonizing and believing things you don't understand.
Yes, yep.
That's exactly
come on
correct.
Now. Yes.
That's what Stevie Wonder says, superstition ain't the way.
That's right. That's right. So it does behoove us, and we probably do need many more books like yours that help us to identify. Yeah, we got to get ready to shut this down, but to help us to identify those things in nature that are good for us rather than to continue down the road of pharmaceuticals, because pharmaceuticals are not necessarily good for us. They may help one thing, but they certainly will cause other problems, and we
absolutely.
See that.
Absolutely.
So, Miss Dumas, I am so glad to have had you come on tonight. We are winding this down right now, but why don't you do us a favor and let us know, tell the audience where they can find your book, where we can find you, and what is it, the best takeaway that you want us to have from you tonight?
Okay. Let me start with, you can purchase the book at either Barnes & Noble or Amazon or directly from my website. My website is called notjustforstoners.com. And not just for stoners, that is the takeaway that I want to leave the audience with, that cannabis, weed, Mary Jane, whatever you want to call it, it is not just for potheads. It's not just for stoners. It really is medicinal.
Amen.
So try to open
it,
your mind.
If you want.
Okay.
You can keep going.
Yeah, he was just saying we could go ahead on. So go ahead. Take your time. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Like I said, that was my thought. I just want people to open their minds and not be so quick to judge, because like I said, I used to think the same thing. And I would, the first thing I would think of when I would hear the word weed, you ever heard of, what was that movie? The Cheech and Chong movie?
Oh, I can see it.
But they were, yeah, but they were just, you know, just a bunch of potheads. But some of the most intelligent people I know are cannabis consumers, doctors,
mm-hmm.
you know, PhDs, lawyers, architects. So it's not, just open your mind and not, like I said, it's not an encouragement to go out and try it. But don't judge those that do.
Right. I absolutely agree. Well, I tell you what, it has been such a great pleasure talking to you. And again, it's Not Just for Stoners is the book by Ms. D. Marie Dumas. And let me tell you, go out and get it. And that way we can understand those things and not continue to demonize things we don't understand. Ms. Dumas,
the
it was a pleasure talking to you. Oh, I'm sorry. Go
Thank
ahead.
You.
The actual
title
is
everything you've always wanted to know about cannabis but were afraid to ask, and the subtitle is Not Just for Stoners. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. It was such a pleasure.
Okay.
Have a good evening.
You as well.
All right. Do we have Mr. Jim Price?
Yes.
All right, Mr. Price. This is Dina with Yah Radio. How are you this evening?
How are you doing? It's a pleasure and a blessing to be able to be a part of this on your show.
Absolutely. Thank you. We are glad to have you here tonight. And you know, at Yah, we always believe that you are amazing. And I love the title of your book, Herald from the Hood. So before we jump into this, because we don't have a whole lot of time, we've had a jam-packed show today, but tell us a little bit about yourself, Mr. Price, and then tell us about Harold from the Hood.
So, I'm from the state of Massachusetts, born and raised in Springfield, Mass. I'm the same town as Dr. Seuss was born and raised in, so when they say Mulberry Street, I know where Mulberry Street is at.
That's a real street, huh?
Yeah, it's a real street. I'm also a school counselor in the public schools and a doctoral candidate at American International College in Massachusetts. I have two books out, children's book author, and pretty much my books are just about social skill building for children ages 4 or 5 to 12. So that's like the target group for my social skill building series, and that's probably in a nutshell about
me. All right. So your first book was, what was the title of your first book?
The Adventures of Harold from the Hood, A Trip to the Park.
All right. So now, and then your second book is
The Adventures of Harold
from the Hood.
Yeah, Friends Like Different Things.
Friends Like Different Things. Okay, gotcha. So tell me how, you know, if I were to pick this book up for my grandkids who are 6 and 8, what are some of the things that they would find on the inside of that book? What made you decide to help children of that age, build social skills, which I think is wonderful?
Yes. First of all, a lot of my books do teach social lessons. So, the first book is about accepting others' differences, which I think fits in with the dynamic of how the climate of our society has been, especially, with all the past things that's happened with Black Lives Matter and things of that nature. So
right.
I purposely made the first book to be about that. And I also, I did a lot of research in terms of, colors and color schemes and things like that that kids are attracted to. So throughout the book is definitely very colorful and vibrant. And I think in that capacity for the younger readers who maybe haven't got that level to read all the material, they're at least are able to be engaged with the color dynamic and, have that, be drawn to that aspects of my books and things. So the second book was just primarily about, having kids understand that, they can like different things. And, bullying is a big thing in the schools now. And, just having kids be aware that it's okay for them to like different things from other students or other kids, So I've definitely pressed myself on making sure that the social lessons are something that is tangible and that they can, that connects with them. On a level that they can understand as well. So I do a lot of the work based on those things.
Okay, which I think is amazing. I think that I don't know that there are a lot of books for children of that age range at all. So what made you come up with that idea instead of writing something, for teenagers or young adults? What made you come up with for young children like that?
Well,
was it something that you saw?
Well, it was an experience, actually. A long time ago, back in probably 2013 or so, I had I've been a counselor in the schools for a while, so I had social skills groups that I had to do with special needs kids and behavioral kids that were elementary and middle school. So a lot of times their focus would be kind of always distracted. So one day I just said to myself, you know, I'm going to take a different approach. So I brought with me a snail puppet to the group to model and use to go along with my social lessons. And I named the snail Hero from the Hood. So the kids, the students definitely enjoyed that experience of having the puppet be a part of our social skills lessons, and that kept them, you know, being able to stay focused on what we had to do in terms of social group. And after that, it was kind of caught fire within the school, and all the kids would ask, hey, where's Harold? Where's Harold? Where's Harold at? So, I mean, it materialized from a place from long ago when I was doing social groups with behavioral and social emotional need students back when. So, and now all these years later, I just never thought it would materialize into children's social skills series. So I'm just blessed to have the opportunity to have all that happen.
Awesome. Awesome. So now have you been able to track or see that it has really made a difference for children who have read those series? Can you see a difference in them? Are parents saying, oh my God, there's a difference? Do you notice that at all?
I have had a lot of support across the U.S., and I've also had support in Australia and in the U.K. in terms of families seem like they gravitate and enjoy the social skill lessons that are within the books. So I just continue to, you know, and try to do things that can bring more awareness toward accepting other differences and let families know that, you know, when they engage in my books, that their kids will have something that, you know, was meaningful to them and be able to have them learn something that they could utilize growing up and getting into their teenage years, which always can be like a, you know, like a difficult stage for a lot of adolescents. So I think targeting the younger generation like that helps to start that process of having them, you know, understand dynamics of self-worth and, you know, self-esteem and things of that nature. You know, so I feel those are the important parts that make up a lot of the reason why I decided to go in that direction with children's books.
Right. And you know what? I'm really actually very glad to see this because we don't see a lot of it. And I think that you're absolutely right. I believe that when we get to a place and you can teach young children those skill sets very early on, then they have something to reach into their bag, you know, their personal bag of tricks that will help them navigate those teenage years.
Yeah,
and we don't do that. Yeah, schools don't do that anymore. And not even parents, because a lot of times we're too busy. So we're not taking the time. And society is changing so fast that it's hard for us to keep up with it. And so, but without those key skill sets for our youth, we're looking at the behaviors of in the juvenile detention centers. We're looking at the behaviors of the young adults. We see the end result on YouTube all day long and on TikTok.
It's the big thing.
We're seeing what happens when they don't have skill sets like this. And so these books like this that help children begin to build their arsenal needs to be in all the schools.
Yeah.
It needs to be a curriculum.
Yeah. And I think that's very true because even today, you know, like the way things are structured and the way that some students have such different learning styles. So some are more visual learners, some are more auditory learners and things of that nature. And I think when you're able to incorporate both in terms of reading, when you have the visual style And you also have the, you know, listen to stories, kind of like, you know, I pull elements of like that rhythm and rhyme kind of thing that is, you know, something that the young generation kind of gravitates to these days. And I think it's just tremendous blessing that a lot of these students are, you know, they go through their struggles and things, but they have support and direction in terms of, you know, people trying to teach them learning them social skills that will be valuable for them in their futures and help them hopefully become productive adults and, you know, coming up down the line and things like that.
Right, right. So what would you say has been the most difficult part of, as an author, writing these books?
Well, I know sometimes the difficult part is just, well, in terms of what direction I want to go, sometimes it is about I flesh out an idea, and then that idea, you know, I'm like, oh, I could probably change that. And just coming up and fleshing out the ideas for what is going to be the main primary focus for whatever the particular book is. I know I'm currently working on the third edition, and those are some of the things I do, you know, try to get around is in terms of coming up with ideas and concepts and things like that, and fleshing out those ideas and concepts to be something meaningful that the kids could gravitate to and they would understand on their level. You know, a lot of times I think we tend to talk and have the students and kids like go through certain situations and things, but we don't ever take the time to try to understand things from their perspective and their level of understanding things. And I think for me, being an author and being able to be in the school systems and see day in and day out what kids are gravitated to. You know, the TikTok is a huge thing in the schools. You know, you catch the kids at lunchtime making TikTok videos and stuff like that. So it's definitely, you know, a part of their thing. And also, you know, trying to get the kids away from all the technology too, because you see so many kids just wrapped up in technology and iPads and everything else. And the purpose of the second book was try to give the idea that there's other things you can do besides being on an iPad or being on your cell phone too, you know?
Yeah. So. Good gracious. Yeah, you're right about it. You are so right about it. What would you say has been the most pleasurable part of you being an author?
I think being able to engage with the community has definitely been something, because I've been able to be a part of a lot of different events, and all those events have been connected with, you know, being a part of engaging with families in the community. And for example, I had did a virtual read and greet with some third and fifth graders from another district in Massachusetts. And those kids were very enthralled to hear the story, and I gave them an opportunity to not only listen to the story, but after the stories, I read it to them. I had them, you know, answer some questions about what was the lesson about in the stories. And of course, they answered those questions, and then I gave them the floor to ask questions to me directly so they could, you know, feel connected to me in that way. But things such as that, just connecting with community and families, I feel so important, because, you know, when you're connecting with families and stuff, and people can know who you are in terms of the author, being the author and all that stuff, and knowing, you know, they support the Hero from the Hood series, it just makes it a better dynamic, I feel.
Okay. Now, have you written anything before these two books, or is this the beginning of your journey?
Yeah, so this is the beginning of my journey. So I just have these two books right now, working on the third. It's going to be a series of probably about 10 to 12 books when it all is said and done. So I'm, you know, in between always fleshing out new ideas for the next social lesson that I'll be involved in the upcoming books and the series. And in between that and finishing up all the doctoral work that I have to do and then working full time, you know, I do what I can to try to keep everything balanced and, you know, in terms of what I'm trying to do and what I'm trying to portray in terms of the book series and things like that. So, I find joy in being able to know that students, you know, and kids appreciate that, you know, the stories that are in my books and it just makes you happy to know that you're inspiring the youth. And for me, that's been my purpose. To inspire the youth in any way I can, whether it's through the books or, through the counseling I do with the kids at the public schools, stuff like that.
That's awesome, because they really do. They need inspiration right now. Mm-hmm. Now, yes. as an author, and kids see that you're writing children's books, if a child were to come to you and say, what would you share with them about becoming an author if that was what they were thinking about doing, which I think would be amazing, but what would you share with them? What would be an important lesson?
I would definitely say you have to know that, if you put your mind to something, you could definitely do something. And if you believe in what you're trying to do and you have a good heart about what you're trying to do, doors will open, because I always feel like, when you do right, good things come in return. You treat people right, good things will come in return. So a lot of times I think sometimes it's just a lack of confidence in people, and especially, kids sometimes will lack confidence in their ability to do certain things and things like that. So they need that support to be able to let them know that they're capable of doing anything that they put their mind to, especially when you're talking about doing something positive, like being an author and trying to have your purpose and understand your purpose for why you're doing what you're doing and things of that nature. So that would primarily be, and it's ironic because one of the students during that virtual Zoom that we did with the third and fifth graders asked that very question about what they could do, or what would they, what advice would I give them in terms of them wanting to be an author when they themselves, so.
Awesome. Now, is there something that you know now that you didn't know when you started writing that would change, has changed your perspective?
I definitely didn't know anything about the business side of everything. So that was a new avenue for me in terms of learning how the business side, because, you write a book, there's so many different elements. You're going through so many samples of your work and, trying to bring together the vision for your book. So many samples that you go through, rough drafts and all that stuff. So, even with the children's books, with the illustrations, you want the illustrations to reflect your vision of what you want to do. And even when it does get time to have a finalized copy and waiting for it to go to print and all that, things of that nature. So it is a process. And the business side of it is a big component of it too. So I think learning how the process worked made the second book a little bit easier, because now I had already been through the process and kind of knew what to look for and what the expectations were in terms of me being able to move forward to have all that happen to get the publication,
Okay. Were you your illustrator, or did you have an illustrator?
I had the publishing company help me with the illustrations. I did go through a lot of samples and samples and more samples of how I wanted the character to be. And I, for me, it's like the character actually has elements of myself in it as well, where, like the glasses, I have those glasses similar to that. The high top fade kind of thing on the character, I used to have a high top fade in high school. So I also connected elements to myself. No one would ever see those pictures, though. That's all lock and key. No one would ever get to that. But so elements of myself are also a part of the character, too. And I think that was important for me. I felt like that was important for me to do as well, to feel like I'm connected not only with the character, but, Hero from the Hood. Like, there's neighborhoods all across the country, and no matter where you come from, you're going to be from some hood, some neighborhood in that respect. So I definitely did like to incorporate myself into the character, and I think that it was kind of a good choice, because it worked out pretty well, at least thus far.
Yes, so far so good. Well, Mr. Price, it has been a great pleasure talking to you and the adventures of Harold from the Hood and what is it, Friends Like Different Things. That is an awesome title. Love that title. And tell us real quick where they can find you and your books.
So I use my email address for a contact. JIMPRIC@yahoo.com. I check my email frequently because I'm usually getting a lot of event invites and things like that. And both of the books can be found on Amazon right now. You just type in the,
Awesome. It was such a pleasure, Mr. Price. I'm so glad that you're doing this. I will order these two books for my grandkids, and I would love to, and I'll let you know, how they like them. But it was a wonderful time talking to you this evening. I'm glad to see that you're doing this, and I hope you continue to write children's books of this caliber because we desperately need it.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's such a blessing, and just thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem. You have a great evening.
You too, and continue blessing.
All right.